Hello and welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm so glad you're with us today for another episode with another extraordinary mom. If you're with us for the very first time, welcome. I'm so excited that you're here and that you found the podcast. This is episode 21, and if you have not already listened to any other episodes, I hope you enjoy today. And if you do, head back into the archives and see the other topics that we've covered. We have such a wide range of moms that I've chatted with who've shared their motherhood journeys and the lessons that they've learned along the way. I think what we're finding is that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We have so much we can learn from one another, and we don't have to be going through the same thing that other moms are in order to learn from their experiences and from their hopeful messages. It's just a beautiful thing, and that's why I love this community. We're really building each other up, celebrating motherhood, and helping each other to feel not so alone. If you've already done so, thank you so much for going over to iTunes and leaving a rating and review. It really helps other people to find the podcast. I want to thank Benny3214, who left a review saying, "Sweet mama love. As a newish mom with not a ton of mom friends, it's so sweet to hear these conversations that make me feel like I can do this. And the roller coaster of motherhood is not just a feeling I feel. It's universal, and we're all in this together." Thank you so much. That is why I love doing this podcast. When I thought this idea up, I was thinking, what would I want to hear? And I would want to hear from other moms who are having some challenges, and I want to hear how they get through those things. There are such universal takeaways from every single mom, even if you aren't in their same exact situation. So I totally agree. Thanks so much for leaving that review. Today I'm speaking with Heather Avis of the Instagram handle Macy Makes My Day. Heather is an extraordinary mom who adopted three children, two of which have Down syndrome, and she's going to talk with us today about her battle with infertility, parenting children with health challenges and other special differences, and she gets really vulnerable about her challenge to bond with one of her children after adoption. Some of you might be contemplating adoption or going through that process, or you may just be curious. This is a great episode to get an inside look into her personal experience. I want to be her best friend by the end of the episode, and I know you will too. Enjoy the episode. All right. I am so thrilled to be talking with Heather Avis today. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Jessica.
How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's a pleasure. Where am I speaking to you from?
I am in Southern California, about 30 minutes outside of LA.
Have you lived out there long?
I am a Southern California born and raised
girl. Awesome.
I've been other places, but most of my life here.
Great. You and I have never met in person, but I followed you on Instagram. I can't really remember social media is so weird like that. Your lives are intertwined and suddenly you feel like you know these people who you've never, ever met. But you have three darling children and you post these cute pictures and these videos of your girls dancing and singing, and it just warms my heart. So that is how I've become endeared to you and feel like I know your family, even though we've never met. But I would love for you to tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, so I grew up in a small town in the San Bernardino Mountains called Crestline, and my parents actually still live in the home that I grew up in. They've been there for, I don't know, maybe 37 years.
Wow.
It was a pretty ideal childhood, small town, great parents. I'm the middle of three girls, and I'm very much a middle child.
You are.
I have all the middle child issues. And get along great with my sisters. We're all about 3 years apart. Went to school in Northern California at Sonoma State University as a liberal studies major and got my teaching credential, teaching special education, and ended up marrying not quite my high school sweetheart. We've been together since high school, but he's a little older. We weren't exactly sweethearts in high school. We've been together since my senior year. We got married when I was 20 and he was 23. And spent our last year of college married and then graduated and said, what are we going to do now? We ended up buying one-way plane tickets to Maui and spent some time there. We took walks every night, not
amazing.
Every night, but often think, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And we're both pretty adventurous and felt that it was now or never. So we did it and we didn't know how long we'd stay. We packed up, we each had a suitcase. We put our bikes in boxes, rented a little apartment, furnished just a few blocks from the beach, and for the first 48 hours just played at the beach, and then started applying for jobs, and we each just worked a couple part-time jobs at hotels and restaurants and retail. And then reality set in, and we realized a few things. We didn't want to work in the tourism industry, and that was pretty much what you do if you live in Hawaii. So we ended up moving back to Southern California, and I finished my teaching credential, got a job as a special education teacher. My husband's a graphic designer, and that's kind of how we started. I taught special ed for 5 years before we brought our first daughter home.
Okay. So tell me about when you decided that you wanted to have children. Were you wanting children for a long time? What did you picture for yourself as a mom?
Sure. I was young when people would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the answer was always a mom. I knew that there were other things I would do, but that was the end goal. So I knew I wanted kids, and I wanted to be like the young hip mom with all my kids by the time I was 30 or younger, and then getting married when I was 20. That felt very attainable.
Yeah.
And because we were so young when we got married, we spent 2-3 years just doing whatever we wanted to do, which you can do when you don't have children.
Yeah.
And I was a teacher, so I had summers off, and it was lovely. And we just decided one day, I mean, about three years in, we wanted to start our family, and took the steps necessary to do so, thinking it should be easy, you know, take a few months, and a few months turned into a few more months, and then those turned into a few more months, and then that added up to a couple years, and ended up on an infertility roller coaster that we never intended to be on, and it was brutal. It's brutal. So I don't know how many of your listeners have gone through that or in it, but it is one of the hardest things I think a woman could ever go through.
Well, I think that so many people struggle with it, but don't talk about it, or don't feel like, okay, if we haven't waited X amount of months or years, then we're not truly, you know, rightfully feeling bad about being in that situation or whatever. But no matter how long you have to wait, when you are ready to start your family and eager, and then you're finding out that your body's not just jumping on board, that's really hard to confront and to realize that, gosh, well, what does this mean for our family?
Mm-hmm. It is. And it's just one of those things as a woman that you think is yours. Mm-hmm. You think, of course, if I choose to, I will get pregnant and have children. And when you do everything within your control to make that happen and it still can't happen, you just feel completely out of control, and I am a recovering control freak. And so I didn't realize in the midst of it how controlling I am or was, even more so then.
Yeah.
And when there's nothing you can do, and you've made all the right choices, and it wasn't because of bad choices or mistakes or anything, that was just totally out of my hands.
Right.
It felt like I was flailing around in darkness, and there was just nothing I could grab onto to ground me. It was very alienating and lonely, because it's one of those things you don't know if you don't know. You can't relate until you've been there, for 100%. Sure.
And I know, I'm sure there's so many people nodding their heads saying, yes, I've been there. Yeah, it took me 18 months to have my first son. And during that time, it's like every month you're wondering, well, is it going to be next month? Is it going to be next month? And then you start to think, is it going to be never? And so when did you get to that point where you start transitioning that thought process of, is it going to be next month? Is it going to be next month, to when do we start exploring other options?
Sure. That's a good question. And I know it's different for everybody. And for us, we were 6 months in when I started getting nervous. And my doctor was saying, you're so young. It's only been 6 months.
Right.
It's not that long. But I still had asked if there was something we could do. Could we run some tests? I was feeling pretty desperate at only trying for 8 months, because it was supposed to happen in my head. It was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And it had been 8 months, and that felt like a long time. And I remember thinking, if I'm not pregnant after a year of trying, then my life as I know it is over. That's how I felt.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then a year rolled around, and it was, oh my word. So I don't even know at what point we really got serious about it, but there was a time when we decided to see a specialist and pay out of pocket, because those things usually aren't covered by insurance. And the specialist ran some tests, and our journey was, every test led to a new test, led to a new test. So it was like all this hope, like, oh, I think it's just going to be this. And then we tested for it. And then that test opened up this new door. I felt like it was like we were running into a wall, and then we'd quickly gather up boxes and ropes and somehow make our way over the wall, and then like run, and then, oh my gosh, there's another wall. And we just kept trying to climb these walls that we would hit. And we had been trying for a year and a half when they had discovered a abnormally large cyst on one of my ovaries. And so a diagnostic surgery was scheduled, and they did the surgery, and the cyst was gone, which the doctor couldn't explain. It was pretty miraculous, and I was grateful because it was very alarming.
Yeah.
And, but he said one of my tubes looked like, he described it as a road to Big Bear, and Big Bear is a city in Southern California at the top of the mountain. So, I mean, it's like curvy, curvy, crazy curvy.
Yeah.
So he said that side, that fallopian tube is shot. There's no way you can drop eggs through that tube. So let's schedule a dye test to see if the other tube is clear. And for people who don't know what that is, they spread your cervix and shoot dye up and watch through like an x-ray machine to see if the tube is clear. And sure enough, it was clear. So that felt celebratory. And then I got a very rare infection a few days later. I just was like doubled over, sick, in and out of the ER. I was out of work for 2 full weeks.
Wow.
I mean, I couldn't keep anything down. I was very ill. Probably should have been admitted to the hospital, but they kept giving me the option, and I kept going home and then being back in the ER. And when all was said and done, I met with my doctor, and he said that there is a very small percentage, less than 2% of women, who can get an infection from a dye test, because a dye test is so invasive because they're spreading your cervix.
Yeah.
So that was me. and at that moment, he said, I'll never forget, because I went in for an appointment, and this was a new gynecologist who I really liked. And when I went, his nurse led me into his office rather than into an exam room. And he just sat behind the chair and just said, you know, this is what happened to your body. A next step would be another surgery to see what damage was caused. But with an infection like that in the part of your body, I mean, it affected just all my inner woman parts.
Yeah.
My scientific way of saying that.
Yeah.
And that the damage would have been extensive and non-reversible, and my best bet was IVF. So in vitro fertilization. So that was a moment for me that was life-changing. I feel like it was his announcement of my infertility. And so we had fought the battle hoping that there was an answer. And when the answer was you cannot and will not have children naturally, it was a defining moment in my life. And I left there and just wept and wept and wept.
And there's like a grieving process that happens, I'm sure, because it's like you picture it going one way and then it's not.
Right. There is. And it's, I think it's hard enough in the midst of all of it too, when people mean well, and a lot of people saying things like giving lots of advice and tips and trying to be encouraging. And I know people mean well, and I feel that I'm a very gracious person and receive things graciously. But there was a point where I thought, if someone tells me to relax and then I'll get pregnant, I'm going to punch him in the face.
Yes.
Like there's no way that I can handle that comment one more time, or just go on vacation, or just stop trying. You'll get pregnant. Or someone had said to me, I bought a whole new wardrobe and then ended up getting pregnant. You should try that. I'm like, new clothes and a vacation in Palm Springs is not going to make me pregnant. That's just not how this works. So
Nope.
It was a dark time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
And were you in your previous life before this chapter started? I mean, did things kind of go along swimmingly in your life? Like, did you have major trials that you'd been through previously that had prepared you for this? Or was this like the first major faith tester and life tester for you?
Yes, this was my first major tester, life and faith test. And I was 23 years old. And so the fact that I'd gone that long, I mean, just shows what a privileged, cushy life I had lived.
But I mean, a lot of people get to that point without major upheaval.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I hadn't had anyone close to my family die. My grandpa had passed away, but he was older and things like that. But it was, it was the first time that I had found myself in such a dark place, feeling totally out of control and pretty hopeless.
Yeah. I'm sure. So then did you pursue IVF?
We didn't. So my husband and I were at a crossroads then of IVF or adoption. And for us, adoption was something we had talked about, but it was never a serious option for us. Mm-hmm. And then I had, through like the earlier months of infertility, I had gone online and just done some searches on different kinds of adoption. This was 8 years ago, so it was different 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had just like looked into international and just a little bit here and there. And then when it really came time, we just said, I didn't think I could handle IVF. All leading up to that point, everything was so invasive and so emotional that the thought of going through that times 10, I couldn't even handle it. I just, there was no way I was going to do it. And then there's other parts to it too. The cost didn't feel great. A lot of it didn't feel great. And so for us, that crossroads, we thought adoption is something we really want to consider. We just don't know anything. And we ended up, so 8 years ago, I didn't know anyone who had adopted. There was no one in our lives who had done that.
Okay.
And so one of my coworkers' friends' sons had adopted their children, and they invited us over for dinner. Uh-huh. And which was so gracious. We were total strangers, and we went to their home for dinner, and they had two boys, and the dad is Hispanic and a firefighter and like very big build, and the mother is like a petite blonde, and their eldest son looked just like their dad, and their youngest son looked just like the mom.
Really?
And we walk in, and life, it was just a normal family doing normal life. And they answered all of our questions, and we both left there thinking, this is what we're going to do. We're going to step into this adoption world.
Don't you love people that are willing to be vulnerable with you and share their life with you? I mean, they didn't even know you from Adam, and then suddenly they're just like sharing with you this very personal experience. But in turn, think of the gateway it led you down in order to pursue your own family. That is just beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. And we don't see them often, but when our paths cross, I always just remind them that they were instrumental in what our lives are today.
Oh, that's so beautiful. That's awesome.
Yeah. And a good reminder, not everyone needs to be vulnerable, but such a good reminder to people to share your stories, because you never know how it's going to affect somebody else.
Yeah, 100%. So then where'd you go next?
Yeah, so we ended up going to the same agency they adopted through, which is a private agency in Southern California. And we ended up, and partly because we had been saving up, and so we could afford a private adoption. Mm-hmm. And we really thought that we wanted a healthy infant. Mm-hmm. And we had done our research, and your best way to be able to adopt a healthy infant is a private adoption.
Okay.
And we had found that this agency was like all inclusive. We wouldn't have to hire any lawyers or anything. They took care of all the pieces. So we started with them and then just entered into the world of adoption, and it's a whole new kind of experience. It's, you have to be very vulnerable and open, and everyone knows everything about you, and you, there's nothing to hide. And if there's something to hide, then you probably aren't going to get a baby.
In the long, wrong line of work. Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you most surprised about when you entered into this new world?
That's a great question. I think I was most surprised about how easily it fit us.
Interesting.
That it was the next step. And it offered a piece of hope that had been lacking. So it felt like, okay, we can start to step out of this dark place and grab a hold of something. Mm-hmm. So that really surprised me. I didn't know. And then I think because of that, we ended up going through the whole process in a way that felt comfortable to us.
Especially after you knew IVF was so not the fit. Mm-hmm. Having this feel like the right fit, I'm sure having that comparison really helped you to proceed with greater strength.
Definitely.
And perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And you asked the question what surprised me. I think three adoptions in, so we've adopted three kids, mm-hmm. I guess I'm jumping the gun here, but
that's okay.
Three adoptions in, my opinions and views of adoption are so drastically different than they were that first adoption. So I would be curious to go back and talk to myself then, knowing what I know now and being where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a great final question in the interview for you, so we'll save Perfect. That. But so you started pursuing adoption. How long before you got matched with pardon me, because I don't know the correct terminology. So do you get, matched with a mother, or what's the language there?
Yeah, that was perfect language. So okay. The way it's different with different routes that you choose to take. So matched would be the right word. With this particular private agency, you create a profile of your lives, and it was just in a 3-ring binder, pictures of us and our family and everything we like to do and don't like to do, and a birth mother who's usually around 7 months pregnant says, this is what I'm interested in for an adoption plan for my child. The agency says, this matches that. They match them up. She looks through the profiles and chooses a family.
Okay.
This is an ideal. And then you meet with that birth mother, and then the baby's born, and you take the baby home. That is in the ideal.
Tied up with a little adoption. Bow. Right, yeah.
A tiny bow.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we had been waiting. It was October 2008. Right? 2007. We had been waiting from October to April. April was when our profile was available to be viewed. So whatever the year was, that's how long it took for us to get to that point with the paperwork and the home study and getting approved. So our profile was available then. And then in June, I had talked to our social worker who said one person had looked at it, which was normal. Mm-hmm. Our daughter came home in October. Our daughter's birth parents never even looked at our profile because our situation was very out of the norm.
Okay. So I need to know more. Inquiring minds want to know.
Yes. So we had said on our paperwork, so when you go to adopt, this is with a private adoption or a county adoption with your local public county, there is a checklist that you say yes or no to. It's everything you could imagine for what you want your child to have or not have, and birth parent history. So mental illness it's not color of hair, but you could say gender, race, and then all of the medical stuff that you know exists and maybe 500 things you didn't know existed, and you're saying yes or no. And almost everything our daughter is on paper, we said no to. So our daughter has Down syndrome. She was born with a congenital heart defect and born with a lung disease called pulmonary hypertension. Those were all things we said giant no's to. Right. So my husband and I were in Europe and got in June of that year and got an email from the social worker with the update saying your profile's been viewed once and there's two babies in our agency who have Down syndrome. That takes a long time to find placement for them, but just hang in there. So kind of like this is what's happening in the agency.
Yeah.
And instantly, something in my heart switched, and I could not stop thinking about these babies with Down syndrome.
Instantly.
And it was, oh, dear Lord, don't you dare do this. Don't you dare change my heart to want this. I don't want this. This is not happening. No. Yeah. No, 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 no. And then long, long story short, over the course of a couple of weeks, my husband and I just talking about it, we got home from Europe and realized that there are so many reasons to say no to adopting a child with Down syndrome, but we couldn't come up with one really good reason.
Yeah.
When it came to a child who needs a family who needs a child, it seemed like a no-brainer. Mm. And so when we got home, we called the social worker and of the two babies, the one who was healthy had already been placed just 2 days prior while we had been in Europe, had been matched with another family. And this other little girl who would come to be ours, they had just discovered some serious medical issues and they weren't looking at placing her because she was about to go under for heart surgery, and they didn't know how she would come out. So the agency was very protective of their adoptive parents and would not place a baby in homes if the baby was not going to stay in the home. And for our daughter's case, it would have been because she was going to die. They didn't know if she would live. And we didn't know. This is all happening in the background. And then a couple months later, they call the beginning of September or middle of September and say, that baby we told you about, she did great in her heart surgery. We know more about her. Would you like to find out more? And in that time from talking to the social worker the first time to find out this baby's not adoptable, to finding out that she was, my husband and I had changed our tune drastically from oh dear Lord, please don't give us a baby with Down syndrome. Two, what if we don't get a baby with Down syndrome?
Wow.
And so we knew that major work had been done in our hearts and our lives. And so when we got the call about her, we were pretty excited to be able to move forward.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she have a name?
Her name was Arpi. She's Armenian, full 100% Armenian.
Okay.
And so Arpi is a pretty common Armenian name.
Mm-hmm. And were you planning on naming her yourself?
We were, yes. And we had met with her birth parents. They had, when we had said yes to moving forward to adopting her, we did so after meeting with doctors because not only did she have Down syndrome, but she had a congenital heart defect that had already had one surgery and would require another one, which would be open heart.
Wow.
And she had a lung disease that was incurable, that was severe and would require her to be on oxygen 24/7 and take a couple different medications multiple times a day. So we were saying yes to some really big things.
Right.
And at that point, Down syndrome was a back burner issue. And it was like, there's so much else here. And we just, but there was something about it that we just knew. We just knew she was ours. And we knew that yes was the only right answer.
I
think if we had said no, I mean, sometimes in total truth, I will look at her, she's 8 now, and I will just find myself crying because I think, what if we had said no?
Wow.
And I think if we, and our social worker was so gracious at the time, she said, you can say no to adopting her and we'll find her another family. Don't feel like you have to rescue this baby. Which I felt grateful that she took the pressure off, but every time we thought about saying no, and there were lots of times that we thought, this is too hard. This is crazy. Only crazy people do this. And we still felt that yes was the only right answer.
Well, I mean, because like you're saying, the Down syndrome was the least of your worries at that point.
Right.
It's like she had a long road ahead of her with all these other issues as well. And this is your first child. Like, you're going to figure out how to be a parent with this child with special needs. That's a big order.
Yes, it is.
It's
and
scary.
I think that there was some grace there that my first child did have special needs because I don't have anything to compare it to.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Everything felt normal.
Yeah.
Even though waking
it was
up
not.
Waking her up in the middle of the night to give her medication is not normal. And knowing how to change oxygen tanks and carry around cannulas, I mean, those things are not normal. But that was my normal. And so it felt normal.
Yeah. And so you named her what?
We named her Mason. We spell it M-A-C-Y-N.
Mm-hmm.
And we call her Macy. Her middle name is Hope because we knew just through our whole journey that Hope was going to be the middle name.
I love it.
And we kept Arpi as the second middle name. So her whole name is Mason Hope Arpi Avis.
I love that. Oh, that's beautiful. So what were those early days of motherhood like for you?
It was incredibly blissful. It was wild. Our very first day as parents, so we picked her up and had our placement meeting at the agency and bring her home. And because she was so ill and there was just a lot of warning of like washing hands, don't let a lot of people touch her, don't let a lot of people hold her. So we had friends alongside us from the very beginning of our journey through the end who were just our village and our crew who were supporting us. And we got home and they had done this people-free or people-less baby shower. So no one was there, but our house was decorated and there were balloons and there were presents and a cake. I mean, everything you would have at a baby shower, but no people. And then we had our parents came, of course, and I have a younger sister who lives in LA who came. And it was just this sweet moment of being all together and opening presents. And I had a baby. I mean, I had been desperate.
It's what you were waiting for at last.
Yes. And she, of course, she had all these issues, but there was something about her that she just became my daughter instantly. And I was so smitten with her and just felt so thankful that I got to be her mom. But then the next morning, we had to get up early. And so our very first full day as parents, we met with her heart surgeon to schedule her open heart surgery. So
throwing you into the deep end.
Yeah. I mean, that is some parents' reality and normal, but I know that that was not a normal thing, but it's all we knew. And so we went to the hospital and sat down with the heart surgeon and scheduled surgery for a month later. And then just figured out, just had to learn each other. She had to learn us and we had to learn her, and lots of holding and all the things I had been dreaming of doing, like feeding my baby or rocking my baby. I mean, little things that, or going to Target with my baby in her carrier, pushing a cart around, you know, those little things that I just had been dreaming of doing. And then there they were. And I got to do it with her.
That is so amazing. And like you said, you had a great village of people around you.
Yeah.
Can you tell me specifically anything that people did or said that really stuck out in your mind that was especially supportive during that time for you when there was a lot of challenges?
There were. I think that something that people did that I appreciated was they followed our lead. And so there was a lot of, I'm sure people in their minds had a lot of not like questions about how to act and how to respond. But I think because my husband and I were just treating it so normal, our people just treated it normal. And so she was instantly just another one of the kids. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
There was no second guessing, nobody was saying, oh, I just think this is a terrible idea. So I really appreciate that our people were following our lead and going with it. I mean, I would love to know what everyone was thinking. And then just great practical things. Like we had meals for weeks where we didn't have to cook dinner for so long, and hand-me-downs like crazy, and so many presents and people praying for us and cheering us on.
Yeah. So I'm sure once they saw you with that baby, many of those maybe concerns or questions probably just went out of their minds because she was your girl.
Yeah. I think so.
Which is beautiful. And I believe so strongly that our children are sent specifically to us.
Yeah.
And while your body may not have been able to carry a child, like there were three children still meant for you and your husband, you know? And so I love how you said, like, in an instant, your mindset changed. That's because you needed your girl, your daughter, you know? And I just think that's so beautiful.
Thanks.
That's so awesome. So, we'll just kind of go to the next step. So how quickly did you decide to adopt again?
Yeah, I thought it would be like a year later, we'll start the process, and then it'll be a year later. But Mason had a lot of health issues and a lot of needs. And then having Down syndrome, she had a lot of therapies. And then being on oxygen 24/7 is kind of tricky.
Wow.
And so we started the adoption process for our second I think Mason was 2.5 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we went about it just so different because with Mason, she was nothing we thought we wanted. And then she came into our lives and she was everything we ever needed. And so our next adoption, we thought, we'll take anything. Like arms wide open. Yes. I mean, there were a couple of things we said no to just because logistically already having a child. But it was very little. We said on the checklist, it was like, yes, 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 we'll take any child. And we were quickly matched with a little girl who is totally healthy. She was 6 months old, and it's pretty rare. And we went through the county. Sorry, I don't know if I said that part. We went through our local county. Local county adoptions are totally free.
Okay.
And because I had, prior adopting Mason, I was working full-time, and then I had now been a stay-at-home mom for 3 years, our income no longer allowed us to adopt privately. And my attitude towards adoption was evolving.
Yeah.
From this is a way for me to grow my family to there's more to it. There's more layers. Growing my family is a bonus, but there's also children who really need homes and I want to be that home. So that was a shift for us in our thinking. So then that's why we chose the county, knowing that there were kids that day waiting to be adopted. And we were open to a child up to the age of 3. We were open to sibling sets, 3 and under.
Wow, okay.
And we were open to so much. And then we get a call for just this little girl who was 6 months old, which is really young for a county adoption. Or she was actually 5 months old. And totally healthy. No health issues at all. Did we want her? And the answer was, yes. Are you kidding me? So we adopted her.
So from that phone call, how long before you got to meet her and bring her home?
Yeah. So from that phone call happened the day before we were going to Hawaii on a family vacation. Booked plane tickets, everything.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, you gotta be kidding. And so my social worker, when she called, she said, so you guys ready to go on vacation? And I thought, she is going to offer me a baby right now. And so she said, I said, we are. And she said, well, I've got a baby. And so she had said, look, it's going to take at least a week before you can, before we can set up a meeting for you to meet with, you to meet with a set of powers that be.
Okay.
They present her officially on paper and we officially say yes. So the phone call is not the official yes. It's, do you want to learn more? So should it be another week before that happens? Go on your trip. You have to go on your trip. Go on your trip. So I was grateful for that because I really wanted to. And so we went on the trip and then just thought about her the whole time, writing her name in the sand. I mean, we were in love.
Had you seen her picture?
Pardon?
Had you seen her picture?
No. We had it. All we knew is she was a little girl, 5 months old, Hispanic. Birth mother is Guatemalan. That's all we knew.
That's all you knew?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, and no health issues. Okay. We knew some of the birth mother's history, which is significant.
Okay.
But it wasn't, but it didn't change our answer.
Okay.
And so we came home and then it was another week, maybe 10 days before we got her. So we went to our meeting where they gave us a picture and then you have a mandatory 24 hours to wait before you can make an answer. Hmm. You have to sleep on it. And as soon as the 24 hours was up, we called and said, yes, of course. And went through, because she was 5 months old and had been in the same foster home that whole time, it was a slow transition, they call it. So we went and visited the foster family and spent a few hours with her. And then the next day brought her home for half the day. And then the next day brought her home for the full day, but not overnight. And then it was the weekend and the foster family had asked to have her over the weekend. And then that Monday we brought her home for good.
Wow. So I know that it's much different because of all the health challenges that Macy had at the beginning, but was your experience different because you're bringing home a baby that was older? Was it harder or easier or?
Right.
What was that like?
Yes. Adopting True, so we named her Truly. Her name is Truly Star. My older sister's middle name is Star, so she got her middle name. And Truly was like parenting for the first time. She was so different than Mason, and in all honesty, it was really hard. The first month, maybe even 2 months, was pretty awesome, and just having this new baby, and she was a good baby. She was so smart, and she slept good. A lot of kids coming who started in foster care are good sleepers. She was eating good. Mason was so excited to be a big sister. So it was pretty dreamy in the beginning. And then I realized that I did not love her like I loved Mason. And it just shook me. I realized that she didn't need me like Mason had needed me.
Hmm.
And that was affecting my emotional ties to her. I mean, we could talk about this for hours, girl, but
I'm sure. Well, I appreciate your vulnerability. This is so fascinating because I'm sure if there are adoptive foster parents listening, they are nodding saying yes, because, and or even just with your biological, I mean, there are so many hormones that make you wackadoo and there are so many factors that play into that bond with baby.
Yeah.
And so were you like, what's wrong with me? Or what were you thinking? How are you going to handle this?
Sure. At this point, our group of people we knew who have adopted had grown pretty significantly from zero to quite a few.
Yeah.
And so we had learned a lot more and learned how common that is.
Mm.
And we had also read books and knowing how important bonding is. And so we had done our part in trying to bond with her. And I remember at her first birthday party, so we'd had her for 6 months, and we invited her foster family, and we had not seen them since then. And they came, and the way that she responded to them was with this excitement and joy that I had yet to see, and it freaked me out. And I didn't know that. I thought we were good.
Right.
I thought we were sailing. I thought we were bonded. And I saw that, and I said to my husband, and to them too, I said, we need some more distance until we've got that kind of a bond with her, because something's missing here. And it's just the reality of adoption starts with a tragedy. It's the only way adoption can start, that there is a severing of a relationship, and that affects everyone involved, no matter how you look at it. Even if you're getting a baby from day one, they have spent 9 months in with this other, intimately with another human being.
Right.
And so it starts with this severing of a relationship. And so I think that we were learning that we knew it in our heads, but we were finding it out what that really looked like.
Wow.
And we just have had, she's truly is going to be 5 in a couple weeks. And we have had to work harder with her to have an emotional warm feeling than we have with Mason. Mm-hmm. I think there's, I've analyzed this many,
yeah,
many
ways,
but I think a big piece of that is that needing that Mason's life depended on us, mm-hmm, and truly came home. She, her personality is just, I got this. Like she was, she was like walking at 9 months, running by 10 months. I mean, and Mason didn't, she and Mason walked in the same calendar year and Mason was 3 years old.
Yeah.
And so it was like, she just did not need me like I was used to being needed. And so, I mean, it speaks volumes of the issues I've got that I'm working, that I'm working through. But the thing that she's taught me, I mean, I cannot say how much I love this girl.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm so grateful for with her that she's taught me is how love has almost nothing to do with emotion, hmm, and everything to do with action. And there's lots of times where there's not that emotional connection, but that is not what love is. That love is action all day long. And
I have goosebumps.
That is so true. Ponder it.
I am. I'm just like sitting with that thought.
And to take the guilt away from myself. Like, it's right, okay that I don't have these warm fuzzies all the time. I love my daughter. I'm taking care of her. She's my girl. Like I have to be more intentional sometimes to, because I'm not feeling it inside, I have to make sure that she's not aware of that.
Yeah.
That's not being reflected onto our relationship. And I think that shows even more how I love her because I'm working that much harder to make sure she's cared for emotionally.
Yeah.
And I love her. I love her.
No, I can hear it. I can hear it. I can feel it. I can feel it, Heather. No, I think extraordinary moms seek to be self-aware. And it doesn't mean that we're always doing things exactly right. It doesn't mean that we're always in a great place with our kids necessarily. Because kids are evolving and ever-changing and needing us in different ways. And we're just trying to figure it all out. And so that moment that was so hard for you to stomach when you're like, I need that look from her, or we got to work on this or whatever. It's like, that's the moment that you can like, that you can work from. If you were just swimming along continuously and thinking like, well, it's, everything's fine. Like it's never going to get deeper. It's never going to get better.
Sure.
But when we confront the hard things, we can be better and we can be better for each other.
Definitely. And there's so much to learn in all of that. I mean, I think that you're only really going to learn from the hard stuff.
Yes.
There's not a lot to learn from the good stuff.
Absolutely. The more moms I talk to, the more I realize so often we pray to be better, to be stronger, to be more courageous, blah, blah, blah. But what are those things that get us there? It's the refining experiences, the challenges,
right, exactly,
the trials. We're not praying for those things. We're not praying like, I don't want to bond with my daughter so that I can, you know, I can learn about love. No, we just want to be more loving.
Definitely.
But when you can acknowledge what it's going to take to get you there, that's when you can like find joy in that journey and you don't give up because you want that better version of your relationship, of yourself, and of your daughter ultimately.
Right. Yeah. And it's so worth it.
It is. It is. Okay, so then, how much longer till the next one? I just love it.
I know. So then, my plate was full. So Mason was very needy in her needy ways, bless her little heart. And then truly is, would wake up bouncing and bounce her way through the day until bedtime. And it was exhausting.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just a ball of energy and smarts. She's smart for her own good and sass. And cute. And so she, my plate felt full and we decided when she was three, we decided to start the process again, knowing it'd be a year. So at the time I thought, I cannot bring another child into my life. However, a year from now feels good. That was in October, 2013. And I got a phone call. So we went into, we decided to go to the county again because of the cost and because we knew, like, we'll take whatever and whoever. And we had taken a picture of our paperwork, held up a little certificate that said something like, we're ready to grow our family or coming in 2014, Avis child number 3 or something like that.
Yeah.
And posted on Facebook. And then the next day, a good friend of mine who lives in another city who we see once or twice a year called and said, I saw that you started the adoption process. This woman just contacted me. She's pregnant with a baby with Down syndrome. You should adopt him. And my gut just dropped. Like, what are you talking
about? The next day?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm not going to do that. There's no way. Yeah. Anyway, long story short, he was born December 12th, 2013. And so we said yes to adopting him. And that was really special because we had never been with any of our babies from day one. We had never known them in utero. And we got to be at some doctor's appointments with birth mom. And it's like, here's a little heartbeat, and have special moments that I had longed for years and long ago let go of.
Yeah.
And so that felt really like such a gift, such a grace from God to have that. And he was born December 12th, and we got to be at the hospital shortly after he was born. And then he came home with us 2 days later, and we named him August. And his birth mother, we asked her to give him his middle name, and it's Riker. So he's August Riker.
Cute.
And he has Down syndrome and had a congenital heart defect as well. So he needed open heart surgery. He had open heart surgery at 4 months old, 4 months later.
Wow.
So we knew the drill. We had been down the road, and it felt a lot less scary the second time around.
Yeah. And were the girls just thrilled to have a little baby in the house?
Oh, they were just in heaven. Yes.
Little doll.
I mean, it was just a lot of stop touching, no more touching, yes. Stop touching, no more kisses. Yes. Don't touch your brother. Stop picking him up. No more touching. Yeah.
Story of my life. I have an 8-month-old, right? Yeah, I have an 8-month-old right now, and it's constantly like, so much love, so much right. love, but leave him alone.
That's it.
The best and the worst all at the same time.
Got out of his bubble, yeah.
So then did you feel like, this is our family, like, when you look at your children now, and you look at your family, you know, say you're taking a Christmas card picture, and you're looking down the row, tell me what you see. Like, how do you view your family? Do you feel like an adoptive family, or do you just feel like a family?
I feel like a family, just as normal as we can be. I feel like we are average at best. And I look at my kids daily. I'm not exaggerating. Every day there is a moment where I think, I cannot believe I get these kids. Sometimes is when they're fast asleep and I'm tucking them in, because all day long I've thought, what am I going to do? Like, this is the hardest day of my life. So sometimes it's late at night. But I just have moments like that, thinking of all the people in the world who get to mother these children. I am humbled to my core that it's me. I can't even believe it. They're so incredible, and that they all just needed each other, and I needed all of them, and they're such good siblings to one another for the most part.
I love it. I know. They're just regular siblings now.
I feel like our family is just so regular, and I know that when we get all the looks and all the comments, and it doesn't bother me a bit, because we've signed up for this. And I know that to see a family with two kids who have Down syndrome, and our middle daughter turns out is half African American. So we have a black child and two kids with Down syndrome, and we go out in public and it's obvious we get looks.
Yeah.
But I tend to forget, like, people think this is different, because it's just normal. It's all we know.
It's just you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that you're normalizing what normal looks like. Because literally, if you look at any family, no two families look the same. So the more we can just normalize that, no matter how kids enter a family, once they're together, they're family. That's it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So social media has played some part of your story. Tell me why you've put them out on social media, and what role social media has played in your family's life.
Sure. So I started our Instagram account because a friend suggested I do. She said, people will love Macy. And it was just Macy. I truly was our daughter at the time, but it was more about promoting Down syndrome.
Uh-huh.
So
what's your handle? What's your Instagram handle?
Our Instagram handle is Macy Makes My Day.
Macy Makes My Day, because she does. Yes,
yes she does. Uh-huh. And so it's just a picture a day of Macy being adorable and silly. And my friend who had suggested it has an Instagram account that is, I think she has 1.5 million followers now.
Oh,
and it's called Tuna Melts My Heart. And it's a dog. And her dog's name is Tuna. And so she just, when she suggested it to us, I think she had like 5,000 followers, which just felt like so many followers.
Right, right.
And we had like a couple hundred. And then she got a huge boost. Something happened with her account. I don't remember what. And she went from 5,000 to about 50,000 overnight. And then did a post with her dog Tuna and Macy. And we gained about 5,000 followers overnight. And then the growth has just continued. So people love Macy. And so it started out just as, this is cute and fun. And then we're now at 64,000 and something.
Just right? Because she's darling. And people just want that little ray of sunshine.
Yeah. So it was where I could, like, every time we got a new follower, I would be able to look at who it is. I mean, that's, like, long gone.
Right.
And so I have had to think about the implications of having my children on social media.
Yeah.
And so I'm not naive to it. I'm aware of that we live in a world that is not all rainbows and gumdrops, but the positive effects of this account have blown my mind.
Oh.
It is, like, I don't even, like, it feels braggy talking about it, so I...
No, go ahead. You're an extraordinary mom. We're already calling you out for being extraordinary, so just go ahead.
I keep most of it to myself.
Yeah.
But I've had... I can't tell you how many people have contacted me who have found out they're pregnant and in utero, found out their child has Down syndrome, and just said simply, your account gives us so much hope.
Right.
I've had women contact me but personally through email. Our email account is on our Instagram account, so people can contact us on email. And a woman recently, her baby's due in a few weeks, was just like, I cannot keep this baby. I mean, she and her husband were beyond devastated. And recently I got in contact with her and she said, I want you to know that. I said, how are you feeling? She said, I'm feeling there is no more fear. It is only happiness from here on out. And you are one of the biggest reasons for that. So kinds of comments, which just blow my mind. And then all the way to one time I was scrolling through and saw someone had linked a friend. And then the friend said, yeah, I know, I'm familiar with this account. This is why we're adopting Ruthie. And then I thought, what? And then went through all these channels and found out this, I got in touch with this person and they had just got home from bringing their 8-year-old daughter with Down syndrome home from China, adopting her.
Wow.
And I just, that one made me just weep and it still gives me chills. So we're now friends on Facebook and they've adopted another daughter who has special needs, but not Down syndrome. And I feel like the ripple effect of what's happening with this tiny little Instagram account is immeasurable. And it just brings me to my knees and humbles me to my core. I can't even tell you.
I love that. So
we keep it going. And it's in my mind, maybe this is naive, I think if something negative were to happen, I'm just going to shut it down. That's it. It's done. If there's a negative repercussion towards my children.
Yeah.
And my children are obviously my first priority. But
the good outweighs the bad for now.
Yeah. And I have made so many friends, and some we've met in person. This last summer, we called it our Down syndrome retreat. There were four families, all of whom I've met through Instagram, all who have kids with Down syndrome, and we all did this family vacation in Palm Springs, and they're some of my dearest friends. Wow. It's incredible. It's incredible. Wow.
That is so amazing. Yeah, social media can definitely be used for good, and you are evidence of that. I just think that's wonderful. I don't know if you want to talk about this, but 2 weeks ago when you posted the picture of your children denouncing the use of the R word, do you want to talk about this?
Sure, yeah.
So tell me about that post that you put out there and kind of what spiraled after that.
Sure. So it's March 6th. I can find out exactly. There's a day that's put aside every year that is March 2nd. Spread the word to end the word is a campaign. And there's a hashtag, spread the word to end the word. And it's just, that's all it is. People use the R word flippantly. They use it jokingly. They use it to describe themselves when they've done something stupid. And just that it's time to stop. And that it is a hurtful word. It was a word that was used to describe a medical condition. But it's now been used so negatively that it's just hurtful. And considered hate speech. So just stop doing it. And I've got lots of friends who used to use the word and said, I no longer say that because I know it's hurtful. So that's all it is. It's just a thing to do. And I had posted something on my Macy Makes My Day page. And there's other people who have kids with Down syndrome who are loud voices in the Instagram Down syndrome world, which is the thing.
Yeah.
And, and for whatever reason on that day, people were going to the hashtag and finding accounts with large followings and just trolling them. And so, meaning that they were writing very mean, unkind, nasty things using the R word and a million other words. My Macy Makes My Day account did not get hit. However, my personal, I have a Heather Avis account too. Uh-huh. I posted the exact same thing, word for word, same picture. And I got hit bad, and it was so nasty. At first, I was trying to just, like, delete and block and delete and block, and I eventually took the picture down completely because I couldn't keep up with them. Everyone was faster than I was, and I know people who have intellectual disabilities who follow my account who would read those things, and yes. I didn't want them to have to do that. And so I took the picture down, and there were other people I know who took their pictures down who felt like they were forced to, and some people left them up. But there were hundreds of awful comments using that word. So it was pretty disheartening. But now having been in this world, this Down syndrome world for almost 8 years, not surprising. And when I say that, I mean people with different abilities and people with Down syndrome are such a fringe minority group and still looked at as second best or even less than, to the point of being convinced to get rid of people like that altogether by not letting them be born. And it's real. It's a real thing, and it's not in the spotlight, and so it's not usually acknowledged until you have to. And when you have two kids with Down syndrome, you have to.
Right. Well, I just admire you for giving your kids a voice, and especially since you were not in a place previously where this was part of your life and on your radar, you know, but since you've become a mother to two children with Down syndrome, your eyes have been opened to the fact that first of all, they are children. They are not their label. And then secondly, they have these needs. Yes. But they also bring something to the world that only they can bring to the world.
Right. Like every other person.
Like every other person. Yes. And so, I posted that picture of your kids on my account, and I'm a nobody, so no, I got lots of positive response and whatnot. But I mean, I feel like I do need to confess to you that when I was younger, I one time when I was like 15, used the R word flippantly, casually, and my brother's friend was in the room, and he said, "Could you please not say that?" So I had totally neglected to remember he had a sister with Down syndrome, and he was 5 years younger than me. So he's like 12 years old, correcting me. But he did so respectfully. He just said, "That offends me. You better believe I have never said it ever again," you know? And when it's not on your radar and you don't think of the people that it might be offending, it can be easy to say, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that word. It could be another word that is offensive to a certain, you know, minority group or whatever. But as soon as you know that it's offensive, the least we can do is not use it. So it's amazing to me that people are willing to not remove that from the vocabulary just because of, I don't know. I don't know why. But I still shy away from wanting to correct people.
It's
like
uncomfortable.
Like face to face. It is. So do you have a recommendation of a way I could do that nicely?
I mean, the only way to do that nicely is just to say, "Please don't say that word. Choose another word." I mean, there's not another way to say it.
And then just move on. And then just move on.
And they could ask why. I mean, if they ask why, you can explain. But I think with a smile and a kind voice, you can say that. There's really not a way to say it that's not uncomfortable.
Because there's plenty of really nice, loving people that do use that word, interestingly enough. And we just have to, promote that that's not an interchangeable word with stupid or, you know, like there's no reason to use that word.
Especially if you know it's offensive. And once people find out, they're like, they respond how you have. They say, "Oh my goodness, I'd not thought about that." That's the last time they say it.
You bet.
Unless it slips out and then they just feel tons of guilt.
Absolutely.
And shame,
and that's good because then they don't make the mistake the next time. It took me a long time to get over that. I felt so terrible.
I just had a friend. We were talking about the incident, we'll call it, that happened on that day. This just happened a couple days ago. And then same conversation later on, my friend said it, describing herself after she made a mistake.
Really?
And she's like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry." And it's not that I'm offended by it. It's just, don't do it. It's just a hurtful word.
Right.
And
just remember.
Just don't say it.
Yeah. Just next time.
And so it's like, of course, don't say it. And try to find another word and don't say it.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So to kind of wrap up, what do you wish people knew about children with Down syndrome?
What do I wish people knew about children with Down syndrome?
I mean, I know they're all individuals, and so that's kind of a blanket statement.
Sure. It's important, you sort of said it, it's important to remember that people with Down syndrome are all their own person.
Yeah.
And that people with Down syndrome have so much to offer you, meaning all people, and yeah. society. And yeah. so it is to your benefit, you being all people, to have someone in your life who has Down syndrome, and I guarantee you there is somebody nearby who is that
yeah.
For you. And so that, and just to remember that people who have kids with Down syndrome, so I'm just going to speak for parents and children, not for adults with Down syndrome.
Okay.
That we, most of us, and this is just a blanket statement, are fighting really hard for our kids to be valued. Mm. And it's a lonely fight. And we would love for people to join us in that. And people who have kids going to public school saying, hey, I'd like to see, or looking around and looking and asking yourself, where are the kids with special needs on this campus? Are they in some classroom in the corner of the campus, which is often the case?
Yeah.
And then making a fuss about it. Because I'm making a fuss about it. I want my daughter included in the classroom. And I mean, if everybody joined me in making a fuss, we wouldn't have to make a fuss. It would be happening. So yeah. it's a lonely battle. It's exhausting. And I feel as a parent, I would love for people to join us
yeah.
in that. And that's going to look different for everybody. But just, I think, being aware that this has happened, that injustices are happening against people who have different abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then figuring out what that looks like for yourself to come alongside that community and help support and lift them up and discover that worth and value that is there to be found.
I love that. Yeah, that's beautiful. And it looks different for everybody.
It does. So,
yeah, after this conversation, I'm really thinking twice about like how I want to talk to my children about children with special needs at their school and what they can do to include them or talk to them or, you know, things like that. Because they're children with the same needs. I mean, Macy yeah. and August want friends just and want to play tag and want to do things just like, you know, a typical child.
Yeah, so, definitely. And yeah. and I think it's, the conversation can go further even just to talking to your kids about being intentional, say, to have a relationship with people who are different than them, period. So yeah. you can talk racially. There's 100%. So many ways that this conversation can go. And being from the parent's point of view, saying this is important that my child has people in their life who think differently, look differently, and act differently so that my child can be a better human being, more rounded, more compassionate, have more empathy. And that's starting now, whatever age your child is, that's starting now to make that a part of what your child knows and how they grow up thinking. And it's just going to change their lives drastically. And I mean, this sounds so, however it sounds, it's going to change the world. I mean, it's going to start with one relationship at a time. And so
yes,
it's important.
We're teaching them how to treat the next generation.
Right.
And so when we are more accepting of people with differences, when we are promoting friendship and kindness and respect above mm-hmm. all else,
right,
that is when the whole world is going to change.
It's true.
I truly yeah. believe that. I truly believe that, Heather. That's huge.
I agree with that too. And it is an uncomfortable conversation at first, but you have to have it.
Yeah.
And then keep having it. And obviously in our home, it's an easy one to have because our kids are so different from one another. But truly, my middle daughter, who doesn't have special needs, she'll be 5 soon, and we will be somewhere, and she'll point out. The other day, we saw a man, I don't know what the medical term is, who has a birthmark that's very like a purple.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the term is, but half of his face looked purplish,
yeah.
and she just goes, Mommy, his face is purple. And I just can say, isn't that awesome? Everybody's different, and we move on because we have had that conversation over and over and
like
over
that.
Again. Or
yeah, no, and that kids don't need to be afraid of people that look different or
right.
or just gawk at people that look different. Like, just to normalize that is huge.
Yeah.
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 I love that. Oh, that's so great. Heather, you are
yes,
truly extraordinary. Jessica. You are amazing. Tell me what
okay,
is next
yes.
for Heather Avis. Tell me what's next in your life.
Okay. I am doing Whole30.
Have you done this before?
Right now? No, I'm 2.5 weeks in.
And so you're like smiling?
I'm fine. I like it.
Okay.
I do like it, but what's next is in 2 weeks, I not doing that anymore.
Okay.
But mm-hmm. for real, what's next? I am actually working on a book.
You are.
I have written it. My first manuscript I've signed with a publisher. It's a real thing.
Oh, and, congratulations.
Thank you. So it's been a lot of work, and I turned in my manuscript in January. So this year will be spent working with an editor and fine-tuning everything.
Can you say what it's about?
Sure. It's memoir-esque. Okay. So it's going to be called The Lucky Few, which is a hashtag that I've created, I guess, or started. Uh-huh. And it's just the idea that there are big, scary things out there, and those of us who actually step into them and discover their beauty are the lucky ones. So we are the lucky few. So for me, that looked like Down syndrome and adoption, but everybody can be a part of that.
Love it.
So it's just going to be the conversation we had times 100. So all the details, all the emotional mess, all the beauty of it, all the questions that anyone is wondering, you can buy the book.
Yes, 100%. Get me on that pre-order list. That is perfect. So awesome.
So that's going to come out next March, most likely.
Amazing.
So that is big, and then I'm hoping with that to be doing more things like this and speaking and building up what we're already doing, building a bigger platform.
And just being a mom.
And being a mom
to three awesome kids.
They are awesome. Yes, keeping my sanity.
Yeah. Oh, Heather, you're amazing. I always ask my guests one final question, and this kind of goes back to the very beginning of the conversation. Okay. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
What I would tell my pre-motherhood self is, oh gosh, you've stumped me.
I know, it's hard.
I would tell her so many things. I would tell my pre-motherhood self that it's going to be better than you could ever have imagined. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, simple
Just
as that.
Just hold on tight. Yeah, hold on to that hope because it's going to be better than you could ever have imagined.
Yeah. And just because the path of your life doesn't look exactly like the picture you had when you're 20 years old, when you got married, it can be better. And even when you're going through those hard days of infertility, it could be better.
Yeah,
you know, like
I would tell my mother, my going through infertility self, I would say there is another side. There is another side. You're going to get there. There's always another side. Mm-hmm. And you are going to get to that other side. And it's so beautiful there.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get there the way that you imagine, but you're going to get there.
Yes.
So just hold on. Hold on tight.
Love it. You just exude joy. I want to be your best friend.
Done.
I wish I was in Southern California with you right now. We can go sit at the pool and watch the kids swim. I'm just picturing that life with you.
Yes, we don't have a pool, but you could have one, and then we'll come to your house.
Awesome. Heather, thank you so much for sharing your journey.
Jessica.
And just sharing your life and sharing your children with us. And for people that want to find you, Macy Makes My Day is your Instagram account. And in the show notes at extraordinarymomspodcast.com, I'll link some more resources where they can find you. And I'll put some pictures of your cute kiddos. And thanks, Heather. You're the best.
Thank you, Jessica. This was a blast.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. And I will talk to you later.
All right.
Bye. Don't you just love Heather and just want to chat with her about motherhood all day long? We seriously could have gone on for another hour or two. And hopefully she'll be willing to come on in a future episode because I feel like we have so much left to cover. I hope today's conversation served as a source of encouragement and hope and inspiration. I love hearing from moms that have been through hard things because I know that when I'm in the midst of a trial, I like talking to people that are on the other side that can attest to me, you can do it. If you just put one foot in front of the other and keep on believing, keep on hoping, life really can be better than you ever thought possible, even when it doesn't go as planned. And I think that message is so powerful, and Heather communicated it so beautifully. I'm just sorry that her book doesn't come out for a whole year. How are we going to wait that long? Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. If you don't already, you can head over to my website, extraordinarymomspodcast.com. There you can find more information about Heather and the rest of my previous guests. You can also find links to any of the resources we mentioned on the episodes. Remember, go over to iTunes, click subscribe to always get the new episodes sent straight to you. And if you're just subscribing today, please download other episodes that you think are of interest to you. We have such a wide range of topics that we've covered by now, and some of them might really resonate with you. So look through and see which ones you think might be a great source of inspiration for you today. You can follow me on Instagram, JessicaDahlquist3. You can follow me on Facebook on the Extraordinary Moms podcast page. And then if you want to follow Heather, of course, Macy Makes My Day on Instagram is where you can get a little dose of happiness every single day. Thanks so much for listening. I'm really excited to read through all of your nominations for the Extraordinary Mom of the Month Award. Head over to my Instagram video that was posted yesterday. Tag a mom that you think is extraordinary, tell me why, and I'll feature the winner on this Friday's episode. In addition, I'll have some great Friday favorites for you. Thanks so much for joining us. I can't wait to bring you another Extraordinary Mom next week, and I'll see you then. Have a great one.